The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love, a conversation on the Church's social mission with Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the Church in the world. We speak about those things that relate to our Catholic vision and what's going on in the world. We look at them through that perspective of values, of belief, and we kind of try to create a better understanding of what is going on in our world. And so we have just finished Halloween, and we're now moving on towards Thanksgiving. We're not anywhere close to Thanksgiving yet, but we're getting closer to that. And as we kind of move here, we also need to realize that some of the things that some of us maybe put in the back of our consciousness are not in the back of the consciousness of so many people in our country. So, for example, for many of us, the hurricane season is over. You know, most of us in the country, fortunately, you know, maybe got a little bit extra rain, a little bit extra wind. And for most of us in the country, we really do remember those kind of days in which the people in the Gulf Coast, particularly in the area around Houston, were really dealing with some awful, awful situations. And we saw some of those pictures. We were sympathetic. And maybe we probably made a donation or two to help the people there. I know that Catholic Charities USA sent workers down there, sent donations down there. We in Catholic Charities in New York were able to make some contributions there. But, you know, I think for many of us, okay, so we did that, it's over, it's done. Now, we move a little bit away from the southwest of the United States, and we move, I guess, to the easternmost part of the United States, which is Puerto Rico. Now, Puerto Rico is not a state, and it's not physically connected with the mainland, but it is part of the United States of America. And we do remember the devastation of Hurricane Maria when it went through there, and Irma, a week or so before that, that it was a very, very devastating thing. And, you know, I bet, again, for most of us, maybe it's in the past, but not so. Not so. It is still a very, very devastating situation down there. In a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with Father Enrique Camacho, who is the director of Caritas, or Catholic Charities of Puerto Rico, to speak about kind of what is still going on there. Now, I'll share a little bit with our listeners that I myself went down there earlier this week, and I spent only a day down there and didn't get to much of the island at all, just basically San Juan. So I didn't see some of the worst devastation that was there. But even within San Juan, you could experience still, you know, more than a month later, some of the problems. You know, the traffic lights weren't working, so traffic was horrendous. And you'd go past places which had, you know, maybe a grass mall or trees in the middle of the mall, and those trees were down. So while we didn't see the devastation in other parts of the island, we knew that there was something there. And, you know, as we flew in, what was pointed out to us in many of the houses that are there, you'll see not roofs, but blue tarps. So you could see blue tarps all over the place in which the houses didn't have roofs. And this, they don't have roofs, you know, now over a month later. So it is an ongoing disaster. And I'm just delighted that in a few minutes we're going to speak with Father Enrique Camacho about that. And, you know, and the other thing I do have to mention is that this past week we had another incident which is so tragic, so horrendous, in which 8 individuals were killed by what was an individual terrorist act here in my own city of New York. And, you know, ironically, you know, probably within easy walking distance of the great tragedy of 9/11, it was, you know, not too far away from there when 8 people were mowed down by a man who decided that he was going to engage in terror by driving a rented truck down the bike path and just took out probably 20 or 25, 30 people, 8 of whom died, 11 of whom are in the hospital, and others who are seriously injured. And so, you know, the irony of things, which I think we need to just reflect upon, is the fact that as we kind of read in the newspaper, that some of the penetration in a geographical sense of ISIS in the Middle East, while that seems to be diminishing and some of their strongholds have been taken back and there really isn't much territory that ISIS, Daesh is holding on to there, the fact that a terrorist ideology continues to go throughout the world when individuals kind of take up a similar vitriolic hatred and want to create disruption and terror, that it doesn't take a lot to kind of pull something like that off. A rented truck, a crowded street, and you can, you know, kill people. And so, you know, as we kind of reflect upon that, we reflect upon an ongoing need for prayer. But I always say, you know, prayer is absolutely critically important, but it's not enough. We have to do acts which kind of make our world a little bit more kind of compassionate, more just. And we have to do those acts that reconcile us one to the, you know, to the other. And so, you know, we live in a world in which, boy, there is so much good going on, but there's realistically, there's a lot of bad stuff that's going on. And as great as the human spirit can be, we certainly can allow ourselves to get into incredible acts of cruelty to one another, which basically are just kind of inexcusable. So anyway, so that's kind of what we're about this week. And I'm just delighted that Father Enrique Camacho, the director of Caritas of Puerto Rico, is with us here in the studio in New York. And Father Camacho, thank you for being with us. Thank you for your hospitality earlier this week when we came down to try to show a little bit of solidarity.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here. It's really a nice, wonderful moment sharing with all of you, and all of your fraternity is really wonderful.
Well, you know, Father, give our listeners just a sense. I mean, you're a priest in Puerto Rico. You are the director of Caritas, Catholic Charities, much like I am in New York. You are in Puerto Rico, but you know, you're a priest and you live in a parish. You say mass in a parish, even though most of your work is trying to figure out how Caritas is run well. So tell me about how your living condition is now in the parish where you were living after the storm.
Oh, I can say that I am also a refugee because the parish that I live in was destroyed, so we cannot live there. Right. So I am living with my parents, but it's a little bit complicated because my parents don't have electricity since Irma, so we've been more than 45 days without any electricity, so it has been really hard even for me.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell our listeners that Father Enrique came up from Puerto Rico to New York earlier this week to be with us, to share with us some of his experience, to be with us here on Just Love, and also to kind of share with some of the people who've been involved in Puerto Rico at kind of a major event that actually was moved from Puerto Rico, which it's there every November, but it can't be held there. So they're holding kind of a different type of event in New York this past week. And so Father Enrique is coming up and he's going to actually be doing the blessing over the food at this event. So he came up to New York. I don't mean to be light of it, but does it feel a little bit funny? He was staying in the rectory that I live in, that you turned on the light switch and it worked?
Yes. No. Yesterday I had my first bath with hot water since 45 days, so that's really nice.
Well, you are welcome. I'm delighted that you are up here. So tell our listeners, just very specifically, it seems like a disaster, just so great, which we have a hard time imagining. What's Caritas doing to help the people that are there?
We started working just the day after the hurricane. We were helping a lot of families. At first, well, we've been doing what is needed, no? Is to provide the basic things like water, food, clothes. That there's a lot of communities at this moment without water. It's so sad. People are drinking water from the rivers, and they are getting sick because of that. So water is very essential at this moment. Also food. There's not enough food, especially in the towns in the mountains. So we've been helping a lot of families. At this moment, we have helped more than 100,000 families because we have reached the 6 dioceses. All the dioceses around the island, we have about 500 parishes in all the island, and all of them are working together with us. We've been the nonprofit entity, and that is said by FEMA. That is the only one that has reached all the 75 municipalities of Puerto Rico, including the islands of Vieques and Culebra. So it has been a really great and a wonderful opportunity, even though this is a very difficult moment, to provide hope. But also we are going now to a more deep process because we are getting involved now in a human development process. For example, we are starting to do health clinics. The first one is going to be this Saturday. Next Saturday, we're going to have a health clinic with doctors, nurses. We're going to provide medicines, all basic health articles. And we are also getting engaged now in a very deep process of case management to help people to get back to, not get back, to be better than they were before, Maria.
We're speaking with Father Enrique Camacho, who is the director of Caritas of Puerto Rico. He is here in New York to speak with some people here about what is going on there and share with them what Caritas is doing. You know, one of the things you mentioned that Caritas, through the parishes that are there, has the ability to be in so many different communities. And that is a great blessing to the people of Puerto Rico that you can touch 75 different municipalities. That must be something that is very, very important and very helpful to everybody in the island.
Yes, yes. It's really a blessing because let me tell you something. There's a lot of communities that and parishes that were the first one who came providing help to their communities because it has been so big, that this disaster, that even the mayors, the municipalities, and the government itself, even FEMA, were not completely prepared to this. This is something huge. With winds of 175 miles per hour, something never seen in the recent history in Puerto Rico and in the Caribbean. It's the biggest hurricane in the Atlantic as so far seen in this recent history. So the other government offices were not prepared. So we, in most communities, were the first one who came providing help to them.
Father Enrique, everybody told me when I was down there that there was far more devastation in the areas outside of San Juan than in San Juan, whether it be in the mountains or the other areas, more devastation there. Now, this is a very simple, naive question. It seems to me the wind, the rain, it goes every place. Why is it that there was more devastation outside of the city of San Juan than in San Juan?
I think that the thing is that it was a big devastation in all the island. The problem is that in the center of the island, there's more vulnerable communities, where poorer communities, because I live in San Juan. My community was complete. I have never seen something like that. Electricity services broken down, so it was huge. But in San Juan, there's more concrete apartments and buildings than the other towns that are more poor. So there's communities, especially in the center of the island, that were completely destroyed because there are wooden houses and communities that live around rivers. And so those rivers got very big flooding. So it affected a lot of communities. And those communities, some of them are still are incommunicated. You go, for example, to Utuado. There is a town in the center of the island, in the mountains, and it's irreconnaissable. It's full of mud. It's something you cry if you go there. I've been there, and it's really, really sad. No, I think that's the difference. It was huge in every place, but in the most vulnerable areas were most affected.
Father Enrique Camacho, the Executive Director of Caritas of Puerto Rico, I think he's just hit on a very, very important point for our listeners. And it's a point, quite frankly, which I think Pope Francis has spoken about throughout his time as when he's been Pope. And I think his concern for the poor is really something that becomes very clear in a disaster, is that kind of no matter what's going on, when something horrible hits, the people who have less suffer even more. The people who have more suffer less. Now, let me say it in the following way. I say this in a way, if an area has a number of things going on and some disaster hits, well, maybe some of those things are knocked out. But you may have a few other things which people can use. In poor areas, there's not that, to use a big word, redundancy. You have one way of doing things. You may have one generator. You may have one, light station. It gets knocked out, and then everything is gone. So I think what Father Enrique has pointed out to us is the reality of the world we live in, that those who have more when something awful hits suffer. But those who have little just suffer tremendously in those situations.
Yeah, we recently have a meeting with the priest, and there was a person who talked something that I think that is really wise. He said, everybody's suffering in Puerto Rico, but there is two groups of people who are suffering. The ones who lost everything, the communities that had the internet, the electricity, and are passing a bad time. And that's difficult. But this other group that lost everything. And that's the group that we are focusing more, no? Because they lost everything. They are living in shelters. They lost their homes. They lost everything that they had. So the agriculture was completely destroyed. The coffee, the plantains. So people who lived from this type of agriculture, they lost everything. So we are trying to focus on them, no?
And for the most part, those individuals are not in the capital of San Juan. They're spread throughout the island.
Yes, yes. I have to say also that there was areas very affected in San Juan, but were the areas that are also most vulnerable areas. Yeah. Villa Palmera, Barrio Obrero. There's an areas, Levittown, that were in the metropolitan area were affected. But, of course, other towns were completely affected. That's the problem. So we have towns that everybody lost something there. And that's very, very sad, no?
It's a disaster. It's horrendous. It's awful. At the same time, sometimes don't disasters bring out the best in the human spirit? Don't sometimes they raise up people who maybe do an ordinary thing, but it becomes extraordinary? Do you have any examples of that?
Of course, of course. At first, we've seen that Maria have helped us to get back to our humanity, because we were very individualist. Well, always with the internet, with our own things. And now, for example, my own parents' home, I've met neighbors that I didn't know. The children are playing with the bicycles, not just with the internet games. No, the families are sharing together things. In my house, my mother plays the guitar, and everybody sings like it was like 30 years ago. No, things good are happening, but I've seen things very beautiful. For example, I had last week something that was, a touching story. My assistant came to my office crying, and I told my Mildred, "What happens?" He said, "Hi, your father. This what happened. It has been really beautiful because there was this homeless person that we helped as our Caritas program. We provide him housing in public housing, and he came with $138 in his socks, in all the pockets of his pants. He recollected taking use soda cans and recycling, and he was providing to help the victims of the Hurricane Maria. When he has a home, but he had no electricity, no food, no water. So these kinds of gestures give us hope.
And isn't it also the case that many of the workers at Caritas, didn't some of them lose their own homes too?
Yeah. Half of them lose everything of my staff. I have a very beautiful story. The accountant, our accountant, she's coming every day to our work. And there was an interview from Brooklyn. The news broadcast from Brooklyn came to, and in that interview, I get to know it because she didn't tell me before that she lost the roof of her house, and she was working. But when she came home to her home, there was still no roof, and she lived with her sister and two nephews. So we helped them as soon as we knew. But we have a lot of people in our staff that still have some. I have one that is in a shelter, but they are working every day, and they say, "I am here because thank God I still have work, and I know that there's people that are passing worse than me, and I know first than anyone that there's a need." No.
The other thing which you pointed out to me is that there has been a certain response by people off the island to help. When I was there earlier this week, there were people there from Catholic Charities USA.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It has seemed really beautiful. The support of Catholic Charities USA, their staff, their president, Sister Donna Bryan, the vice president. We have now a disaster manager there, officer there, Kim Burgo, and they have been helping us in different ways, economically, with providing things. It has been really wonderful. And also, I have to say, Catholic Charities New York, your office has been really great, helping us with provided us funds, and has been really great at helping us receive funds from the government, from the governor of New York. It was really great that we received $100,000. So it has been, and the company, you've been calling me, your staff, now you bring here me to visit you. I feel the fraternity. I feel that we are not alone. And that's beautiful. That's wonderful. When you pass by something that is really difficult, but when you have people that help you, you feel supported. And that's a gift.
Well, Father Enrique, thank you so much for kind of sharing with us, taking the time to come up come up here. And if there were one final thing you would want our listeners to know, what would be the final thing you'd like to say to them?
I just want to thank all the people. First, the Latin community in the United States, Puerto Ricans, Latins that have been so very, very supportive, but also the Catholic community. I've been receiving calls from people who they don't have Puerto Ricans in their communities, and they feel moved to call us to say, well, how can we help? So I have to thank everybody who's praying for us, who is searching for ways to help us and want to do something to help us to feel warm, to feel the love of God. Thank you so much. Bless you. In a moment like this, this has been the worst disaster in our history. No, there's nothing compared. In 1928, we have something like that, but it was not as big as this one. So it has been the biggest challenge in our lives. And having the support, the love and prayers of kind and beautiful people like you, oh my God, wow, bless you all.
Well, bless you, Father Henrique. Gracias por todo lo que hace. Thank you for your presence here. And I'm going to see you later on today because we're going to continue our conversation. And thank you so much for being with us here. Father Enrique Camacho, the director of Caritas Puerto Rico, who is here in New York. I visited the island earlier this week to kind of experience a little bit of what was going, very, very little, but basically to express our solidarity and support. Let's take a break. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back in a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. We're here reflecting on what's going on in the world from the perspective of our Catholic values to kind of see how we might kind of reflect upon what is what are some of the issues that are coming for us. We are this week, we're kind of sadly kind of talking about disasters. And what we're talking about them is because some of the disasters, the hurricanes, have been in the past a little bit. And so we want to make sure that they don't go out of people's minds, because it takes a long time to recover from a disaster. Otherwise, you know, you'd be over with it in a day. And so this has been a pretty, pretty devastating hurricane season. We know in the United States, the Gulf Coast was hit very bad, that area around Houston, but not limited to there, even going over to Louisiana, that was a very, very devastating situation. And then we knew on the eastern part of the United States and in the Caribbean that there was a number of storms that kind of came up that way. Some didn't do much damage at all, fortunately. Some of those, we don't even remember their names. But there was a tremendous amount of damage done by Irma and Maria. And so we want to make sure that people do not forget about that, because it is a ongoing need for recovery and is there. You know, because of the number of people who have migrated to the United States from the island of Puerto Rico, most to New York and Florida, but other places too, I think there is a natural tendency to kind of focus on the devastations that happened there, which were completely devastating. But, you know, from our perspective, there was a lot other that went on, and we want to make sure that people realize that it's not just Puerto Rico, but there are other islands there. Maybe they're not as well known in the United States, but still there are people living there, and it is really a disaster that needs to be there. So I'm delighted that we have on our show Kathy Howard, who is the section chief at the United Nations for coordination and response of humanitarian affairs. And I'm delighted that she has joined us here in the studio. I had the privilege to speak with Kathy a week or so ago to learn some of the work that she was here. And I'm just delighted she's able to kind of be with us on the show. Kathy Howard, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Monsignor, for the invitation to highlight what's happening in the region. Thank you very much.
So why don't we begin by just give our listeners a sense, because I do think we in the United States maybe aren't quite as familiar with the role of the United Nations as we might be. So before we get into the specifics of what's going on now in the Caribbean, could you give us a little broader view of the role of the United Nations when there is a natural disaster in different parts of the world?
Absolutely. The United Nations obviously is ready and responds to both sudden onset natural disasters and also, of course, in many countries where there's man-made disasters, wars, conflicts, and so on. Particularly in relation to sudden onset natural disasters, the United Nations and also the work of OCHA, the Office of Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, is to support the governments of affected islands, territories, countries, to first of all coordinate the assistance. We need to ensure that assistance is getting to people at the right places, the right people at the right time, that we're ensuring that people who are the most vulnerable are getting the assistance, that no one is left behind. So the United Nations, and particularly OCHA, has that role in bringing the whole system together. And the whole system, it's not only the United Nations, it's also non-governmental organizations, the first responders on the ground, civil society, local actors, also the Red Cross movement is often very active. So we bring people together. We identify collectively what are the needs of people impacted by any particular crisis. We help coordinate the response. We also raise awareness. to governments, to donors, to civil society, to the public. This is also why this opportunity to speak today is so important, to raise awareness about the situation and also to raise funds.
So, Kathy, thank you for that that description. Give us a little sense of specifically what has happened in the Caribbean in the past month or so. Give us a sense of that.
As you mentioned, Monseigneur, this has been a highly unusual hurricane season. The ferocity and the number of hurricanes hitting the Caribbean region this year has been unparalleled. To give you a sense, some 15 islands in the Caribbean have been impacted. Whether it's Puerto Rico, whether it's Cuba, whether it's a lot of the destinations many people may have gone on holiday to, the British Virgin Islands, St. Martin, almost much smaller islands such as Barbuda, Dominica. So really almost no one was not affected. And the hurricanes of Irma and Maria were quite staggering. Hurricane Irma was the strongest hurricane recorded. And Hurricane Maria was the fastest developing hurricane. It went from a Hurricane 1 to a Hurricane 5 strength in about 48 hours. I mean, this is really unheard of, one after the other. And it's created, you know, a swathe of devastation.
So how does the UN kind of decide where it's going to help? And I just, for our listeners, I haven't heard much about, like, the UN being involved in Houston. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, that's a city of the United States, but all those other places are their own countries too or something. So how does the United Nations kind of decide where it's going to focus?
It's a very good question. As I mentioned earlier, the United Nations works in support of governments, of member states. So we really take our lead from, is there a request for assistance?
Okay.
That's the first first and foremost what needs to happen. And many governments are well able to manage the response through their own resources, and that is the role of government. Where a government finds itself overwhelmed by a natural catastrophe and it needs additional assistance, then there will be a request coming in, and then that is what we will respond to. So you're absolutely right. I mean, of the 15-some islands that have been impacted, some did reach out for international assistance, and many said, we can manage. And that's fantastic. And sometimes there's a variety of responses possible. The United Nations has also sent, for instance, just purely technical support missions to places like the Dutch territories of St. Martin and the British Virgin Islands. Very short, sharp, focused technical support, and then out we come. And in other areas where the devastation was of such a magnitude, for instance in Dominica, where almost everything has been destroyed on that island of 75,000 people, there we are there for the longer haul to both provide emergency humanitarian assistance, but also assist with the recovery and reconstruction.
So that I've heard that the island of Dominica is one of the places that really, really was devastated. How big an island is it? Can you give us a sense of how big?
It is a small island. It's okay. Very small island. It has about 75,000 people. So that gives a right. sense. Some of your listeners may have indeed visited Dominica on holiday.
Okay. It has a give a listener a sense, and maybe you don't know this, but is it the size of England?
Oh no, much smaller.
The size of Manhattan?
So, yeah, more along the lines of that. So you can also really imagine that when Hurricane Maria came along, Dominica had been spared by Hurricane Irma, but Hurricane Maria came along and just wrought a path of destruction across the island. I mean, almost no person or family was left untouched. You have to imagine, you know, incredible scenes of devastation. Almost the vast majority of houses, structures, civil structures destroyed or severely damaged. Roads impassable, electricity out, of course, telecommunications out, all the things we take for granted in to be able to manage our normal daily lives.
So
gone.
Let's do a little comparison, because we did spend some time talking about the situation in Puerto Rico. We're now over a month after the storm hit. Is there any electricity on Dominica now?
Oh, absolutely. Life is starting to return to normal. Okay. There's been extremely strong leadership from the government of Dominica, and they've really made a sort of absolute priority from day one to try and get electricity restored, roads cleared. Clearing of the roads really important to be able to get assistance to people, get assistance out of the capital, get the food necessary, get the water purification tablets out to people. So markets are opening, shops are opening again, but it's going to be a long haul. And I think
was there much agriculture, farming on Dominica?
Yes, it is primarily indeed a reliance on farming and fishing. So we've seen a lot of destruction also.
So from my point of view, which I don't know anything about any of this, it would seem to me if you had such devastation, my world, isn't this like harvest time for a lot of crops? So it seems to me they lost the whole crops.
Absolutely. And that's when we talk about sort of human assistance, there's the first, the life-saving assistance needed. But then we need to also be ensuring that the farmers and the fisher folk also have the tools and seeds they need, can get back to fishing again. And indeed, that's key, because that's all part of the recovery.
Now, one of the things, we're speaking with Kathy Howard, who is the second section chief for coordination and response in the United Nations Office for Humanitarian Affairs. And I think our listeners will be intrigued by kind of an important event you're having up, I believe, on November 21st. Can you kind of tell our listeners what that? It's not a public event, but it's a very, very important private event for the states, the member states who belong to the United Nations. So what's going to happen on November 21st?
Absolutely. Thank you for asking about that. As you sort of mentioned, there's now a need for recovery and reconstruction of Dominica. And on the 20th and 21st of November, it's going to be a two-day event. Member states will come together at a pledging conference. So this is where, by that stage, we'll have a much stronger sense of what is needed to rebuild Dominica. Member states will come together to pledge, to offer their support, their monetary support, most importantly, to this very important endeavor. Just though, maybe to backtrack slightly, also to note though that in the aftermath, the immediate aftermath of the impact on Dominica, UN OCHA also published a flash appeal, and that the flash appeal highlights the humanitarian needs and resources needed for that. So there's a variety of tools that the United Nations
again
use.
for our listeners. Would that basically be a fundraising campaign, a flash appeal?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
It's what we ask again of the international community to provide to get that emergency food aid out, to get mobile health clinics up and running, to provide emergency education for children whose schools have been destroyed. So that's the initial 2-3 months. And then following on from that, it's indeed reconstruction.
I know when we spoke, the pledging conference right before Thanksgiving on November 21st is geared to member states. Is the flash appeal to the general public, or is it to member states or both?
It's really both. So if people are interested in knowing, you know, how they can support, you can either go online and access the flash appeal. I think that we can provide that, but also there's a lot of agencies and organizations who are working in Dominique and elsewhere in the Caribbean who will be fundraising, whether it is for UNICEF here in the United States or the American Red Cross movement and so on. So I really encourage people, if they're interested in knowing how to support, just indeed look at some of these agencies, because they are very much still involved in the Caribbean response.
You know, let me ask you, this may not apply to this particular storm, but I know at Catholic Charities we oftentimes get donations from people who say, well, we want to give it to you because we trust you that the money's going to get to actually help people. I assume sometimes, given human nature, that making sure the aid gets to the right place is a serious challenge.
It's an excellent question. You know, I can assure you, Monseigneur, that the United Nations and does everything possible to ensure that the partners that it's working with are really able to do the job, are completely bona fide. There's a huge amount of emphasis put on monitoring of the response, ensuring that the people most vulnerable are getting the assistance. You know, there's no 100% guarantees, right, in life, but believe you me, it's a duty and obligation on all of us to make sure that people's hard-earned money gets to where it's needed.
So when you're providing some of the help to people, do you sometimes partner with local NGOs in the country?
Oh, very, very much so. Everywhere we work, we'll find that the first responders are, of course, already the local communities, civil society, small NGOs, local NGOs, and, you know, the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, of course, has a massive network as well. So there's a huge network that we can build upon and use.
If our listeners wanted to learn more about the work of your section, where would they go?
I encourage people to go online to the UN OCHA website. You'll find everything there in terms of where OCHA is working, the kind of crises we're supporting, and also how you can support as well in the efforts.
Great. Kathy Howard, the Section Chief of the Coordination and Response Division of the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Thank you so much for being with us and reminding us that there are places, particularly in the Caribbean, that have been victims of Irma, Maria, the recent hurricanes, which maybe aren't getting as much notoriety, but there is a need there. The United Nations is working in those places, working with local organizations to bring that. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Monseigneur.
We'll take a break now from Just Love. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. If you want to learn more about the topics we're talking about, you can go to the Just Love blog .org, and you can follow me on Twitter at MSGR K. Sullivan. We'll be back in 2 minutes on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Our weekly conversation about the church and the world. Just do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, and our world will be, and yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. Sometimes we forget that. We have to love ourselves, because if we're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves, we're not loving ourselves too well. Maybe that's why we don't do too well in loving our neighbor. Well, this time of the year, in New York, it also is marathon time, which has been a big, big kind of event, which has grown in the past 25 years to thousands of people running 26.2 miles. And one of the things that one of our trustees at Catholic Charities did, probably 6-7 years ago, said, hey, wait a minute. Marathon is a big event in New York. Catholic Charities is a very important organization in New York. Maybe we combine the two. And the marathon does provide some slots to charities where if they can kind of recruit some runners to run the marathon and raise some money, that they can raise the money for charity and a little bit of help to people as they run the marathon. So, Tom, tell us a little bit about what's going on with the marathon in New York and Catholic Charities.
Sure, Monsieur. Well, I mean, as you had mentioned, this is the 47th annual running of the race. There's going to be about 50,000 people running this weekend. And Catholic Charities this year...
I won't be.
You will not be. Neither will I. But we will have 10 runners who are going to be running for us. And in total, they've raised over $35,000 for Catholic Charities, Monsignor. So they've done very, very well. And, you know, we're wishing them well this weekend as they take that run up. And we hope that some of them wind up coming in first place if possible. As you know, it starts out in Staten Island. And
they're not coming in first place. They're not coming in first place. I mean, I just think it's open to every country in the world, but I think we got domination of the marathon over the past few years. You better be coming from one of those African countries if you want to win. I'm just looking at the names of the past 10, 15 years. Nebraska doesn't do too well.
No, it's true, Monsieur. No, I think Ethiopia has a leg up
on
Nebraska.
So. Anyway,
I think you're right on that.
Okay.
And, you know, as we said, it starts out, of course, in Staten Island. It goes through the five boroughs. It goes north through Brooklyn and Queens, then back into Manhattan. It crosses the Queensboro Bridge at 59th Street. They run up to the Bronx. Then they come back into Manhattan and they wind up at Central Park along 67th Street. For all the runners, though, we wish them the best of luck.
This, in addition to the beginning of November being a marathon in New York, throughout the country, the beginning of November is a time when we kind of is voting, is election day, is first Tuesday in November. Tom, there's interesting. We usually think about voting for president, council member, senators, representative, but sometimes we vote for other things. What's the one thing on the ballot in New York that is a non-elected office referendum?
This coming election day, Monsieur, on Tuesday, New York residents are going to decide on whether they want to hold a constitutional convention to amend the state's constitution. The referendum occurs every 20 years, and it asks voters if they want to propose an amendment to the normal process to the state's constitution. New York is not the only state that does this, Monsignor. 14 other states have mechanisms that periodically as voters about this, but for this year, New York is going to be the only state that where this referendum is going to wind up happening.
So it's interesting because constitution is a little bit harder to change than a particular law. You can repeal it, you can change it, amend it. Constitutions of states tend to require a longer process to do it. They deal with some of the more global issues and not so specific detail. In New York, it's been pretty controversial this year because a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, let's not do it. There's some protections in that constitution that, given the volatility of the current political environment, hey, there are things in there which things could go haywire. So let's kind of keep it as it is and maybe, you know, we'll look at it down the line. I kind of have a great deal of sympathy for that. I mean, my general instinct would say, well, let's look at it all every 20 years, see what we're doing. But sometimes the atmosphere might be a little bit too volatile in order to do that. So anyway, that's on the agenda. Anyway, I just want to thank you for being with us on Just Love. We talked about some things which are really, really important that when a disaster strikes, that we don't forget about it after a day or a week. And it takes years to recover, depending upon how long it is. And we got to stay with our sisters and brothers in need, even if that recovery requires a long time. Just love. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and more compassionate. Join us again next week on Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.